Welcome all once again to Dual World in episode 91. This is the beginning of our Game of the Year countdown shows, which will go through most of December as we lead up to our Game of the Year podcast sometime in January. But that will be the back half of the show. Before we get there, let's introduce our panel of gamers. We have they came to the fact that they burnt down the White House nearly 3 billion years ago. Chad.
What up? We burn that sucker to the ground and we'll do it again.
Is that a threat?
It's not a threat.
What is that group from Archer? I'm the Nova Scotian Liberation Front or something? We're that.
Well, I was about to say, it's a pain in the ass to kind of cross the borders between Canada and the United States now, so I don't know if an entire army of you folks are going to get across.
Yeah.
I know it's all...
Those are crazy people. Crazy people do not smile in front of U.S. Customs because they take that energy as offense.
Yeah, first time across the border, I was just like being my usual self, like standard, sarcastic, kind of making some jokes, trying to be funny, lighten the mood, and they were not having any of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to a Distant Worlds in Chicago, the Final Fantasy concert. And we didn't bring anything. We just had suits. And we were going to stay there for a day and come right back. And the U.S. Customs guys did not like the fact that we didn't have anything. We were all so suspicious. They were like, hold on a second. You guys do not have anything with you. And checked their passports like 3 times. It didn't help that my passport had, like, I think, been through the washer at that point. So it looked extra sketchy. but yeah, it's quite an ordeal.
Yeah, and I know most of it is on our side, because it used to be that you can cross over the borders with no problems because the two nations are so nice, and we're not afraid of Canadians like we are Mexicans. But yeah, we started like having it stricter, so Canada's like, you know what, now you have to have a passport. And customs in any country is just a pain in the ass, because there's so much they don't want you to bring over, and they always need to know what you're doing. And it's
yeah,
just
like,
pain.
Canadian customs are crazy, too. Customs that aren't so anal are Spain and England. When I went there, they were both just like, yeah, all right, sure.
They probably were surprised. Anyhow, we have Phil, another Canadian this week.
Yay, yay!
And you mean AA. And from across the pond... We have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Martin.
Hi.
So yes, we have a very international podcast this week. But that's not why we're here, and that's not really the discussion of this week. We're here to talk video games, and apparently
we're
word
like
on the street
of a name conversation.
The UN of video games. Except we get stuff done, so that doesn't count.
Huh. Boom!
I burn!
But yes, burn on the street.
Take that, peacekeeping organization.
After all countries in the world.
But they're a peacekeeping organization that doesn't really have the means to keep peace.
Yeah.
But again, that's not why we're here. I mean,
whatever. Video games.
Video games, yes. Word on the street is that a certain Japanese company has released a new console about 3 weeks ago, I guess 2 weeks ago now, in the States, and just this past Friday, overseas. Oddly enough, it still has a week to go before it releases in Japan. But after his will he, won't he, for the past 3 months, Martin finally decided to pick up his Wii U.
Well, after he was dead certain on not on get.
Should I tell the story how it happened?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So on Friday, I went to a friend who had pre-ordered a Wii U and got the thing. And then I got over there with my girlfriend and a couple of our friends of his were coming. And then basically the whole day, we only played Wii U, so Nintendo Land and Super Mario Bros. U. And I was like, this is pretty fun, but I don't think I need this thing. At least not right now. So I went home, went to sleep,
And the next morning, I woke up and was like, well, I have money.
Nothing. No good decision has ever started with that phrase.
I have money to spare. I could use a new thing to play around with, and it's not like I wasn't going to get it down the line anyway. So I went out and bought a Wii U.
So the day after you decided that it's not for, I don't need it right now, it's like, you know what, I should get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you tweeted about it when you fade Friday. Like, yeah, this is fun, but I don't worry. Like, you didn't enjoy New Super Mario Bros. U with 4 or 5 people. And then, like, within 12 hours, you took a picture of your new system with Zombie U.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was kind of special.
It's totally rational decision-making on my side.
And I guess it helped that you didn't put a trigger on the Vita, which you were having a will-you-won't your relationship with over the past week as well.
That's true. If I had bought the Vita, the Wii U purchase would probably not have happened.
But then you'd have a Vita, I mean.
Bad choice. Then you'd have Persona 4 the Golden, though.
Yeah, that's basically the only reason I would get one.
Seems like Persona 4 is a huge system seller, because I've seen a lot of people talking about that game this week.
They might as well bundle them together and say, hey, you can buy Persona 4 the Golden, and it comes with this Vita thing that you can play it on.
No. They should rename it. It's the Persona Machine. Quiet.
Yeah.
That would be an improvement over just being a paperweight.
When I bought the PS3 before, it was good. I bought it with Metal Gear Solid 4, and I didn't want a PS3 at the time. So I was just like, oh, okay. I got Metal Gear Solid 4 and the PlayStation 3 is on the side. So,
yeah. I mean, it makes sense because, you know, as we always say on this show and I always say on Twitter, it's software sells hardware. No matter how good the Vita is, you're gonna need that software. And it seems like Persona 4 Golden is that game for a lot of people. But I thought Persona 4 Golden was a remake.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's a remake of the best RPG.
Yeah, the people that play Persona games don't mind that it's just a remake. They'll buy it anyway.
And to be honest, Persona 4 was released super late, so a lot of people already moved on to PS3 and 360 and might not have had the chance to actually play Persona 4.
Okay, I just remember... I remember Chad was big into Persona 4 at some point. He's big into every Persona, but... That's why it comes to mind, but yeah, there you go. So, Phil, do you have an interesting story as to why you bought your Wii U, or is it just, I was going to buy it anyhow?
No, I pre-ordered that, maybe a month, a month and a half in advance. And it's actually, I've only ever gotten two consoles on launch day, and that's the Wii and the Wii U. I usually get every console anyway, but I don't usually get it on launch day. But there's, there's a certain charm about Nintendo consoles that other consoles don't have, in my opinion, that, like, when I unbox it, I get this super happy feeling, and I want to, like, go through the menus and all that, whereas, when I got, like, my Xbox or my PS3, I was just like, all right, just want to put in this game that I got with it and play the game. But, like, with the Wii U, I was like, oh, man, I want to check out the Miiverse. I want to see what this console has in it right now before I do anything.
And before you actually got to check out anything, you had to wait, like, 1 or 2 hours.
That sucks, especially when you have anticipation to check out all that stuff. Waiting, like, half a day to actually play the system was a problem. Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say about how, like, you get some joy out of, like, oh, I'm going to check this out, I'm going to check that out, because I went to an event on Friday, where and they had Wii U set up, so I was like, yeah, I haven't played one, so I may as well go and do it. And all of the Nintendo employees, like, I've been at an Apple store when the new iPad comes out, and they congratulate you on buying the product, and they were doing that, they were congratulating me on going to play the Wii U, and I was like, Nintendo's really going with the sort of Apple kind of, the Apple attitude when it comes to their products. Like, they're nicely designed, and a lot of the time they're form over function, you know, and so that doesn't surprise me at all that you feel that towards.
And you know what's really weird? When I went to buy my Wii U at a local electronics store, they had a Nintendo employee there showing off the system. I don't think I've seen that before.
I don't think I've either, but I mean, it seems like a good idea. I mean, especially being that one of the major things people say around the Wii U is that it's confusing and, you know, consumers might not understand that it's a new system. So it's nice to have somebody who's there to educate you. But it's a very hard system to sell, I think, because it does so many things. And not all of it is necessarily something you overtly see when you, you know, like if you see it in a commercial or something like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, we might as well start with you folks and your super long updates. I heard that some people said that they started shipping them with the updates now, but I'm not 100% sure. But you two had to update your systems, and I assume that was a fun process.
Yeah, it took me 1 hour exactly to update my machine.
Does that include download and installation?
Yeah, basically.
So after I updated my machine, I also said, before I actually do anything, how about I transfer all of my Wii stuff to my Wii U right after the update? And then that is a whole process that's even longer and completely convoluted to do. Like, it felt like I was trying to piece together a puzzle to get my Wii over to my Wii U, because it's like, okay, you need an SD card for this, download this on the Wii, download this on the Wii U, put back in your SD card. It was crazy, but like the Pikmin thing was kind of neat, not as neat as, you know, how long I had to wait, but now I don't need to use my Wii at all anymore, except for playing GameCube games, so that's pretty
and
cool.
And Brawl, so you can actually use GameCube controllers with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you not use those Wii Pros?
I don't think you can use Wii U stuff with the Wii.
No, like just a normal Wii. You know, like they had those classic...
Oh, I don't know. Most people just preferred playing with the GameCube controller for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I understand why. You got used to it for 7 years, so you figured it's your Brawler controller.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and this is something that I've heard, I don't know if it's made clear, is that you can actually download the update in the background, but they don't really tell you that?
Yes.
Wait, you can?
That's right.
Yeah, if you...
Yeah, apparently, that's something I also didn't know about until everybody started saying, yeah, you can just download the update in the background somehow.
That was totally not clear at any point.
Yeah, it seems like they don't make that clear, and it's kind of, from what I understand, the way you do it, and this sounds really backwards, it's like when they ask you if you want to do the update, you press cancel, and it will download the update in the background of the system.
Yeah, because that's what cancel means.
Yeah, that's why I said it's backwards, because you think cancel, like, okay, I'm not going to do it right now, but apparently it does do it well. And that's just, I don't know if it's the same. I know you can update games in the background. Is that made more clear?
Yeah, that's pretty clear because you can just hit start game even when the patch is downloading. So that's pretty clear. That's not actually canceling the patch. So, but the update thing was not clear at any point.
Yeah, I didn't take any chances, so.
But, I mean, it also depends, because I hear that sometimes when it's downloading stuff, it does kind of hit a system that's already kind of moving slow. So sometimes you have hiccups while playing the game. But other than that, I don't know.
Can I talk about a bit of a system? I mean, we talked a bit about Wii U stuff last week. But none of us actually had the system. So, I think I mentioned the menus looking kind of unintuitive. After using it a while, I think it totally works. I'm still a little bit confused why the friendless and the Miiverse thing are separated. I think that should be like one app, which would make way more sense. Because I'm not quite sure why I can send friends requests through both.
But the
you can send a friend request through both. Just they made a completely idiotic thing where they will not get the notification if you send it through the friends list. For some reason.
That seems kind of
tech-worthy. But for viewers, it works.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And but the other thing we talked about last week, which still sucks, are definitely the loading times. I have to say, even like getting into system settings or pulling up a friend list, it just takes too long. I'm sure Nintendo can probably work around it, but I guess it will take some time. But they definitely need to fix that.
Yeah. All that stuff is a bummer. Despite, you know, all the bad stuff we've just been saying about it, I really love the Wii U. I think the Miiverse is great. I think that's one of the best things to happen. I love it. Like, it makes you a better drawer than you really are in real life. I've made a few drawings, and they've gotten a lot of likes. And, like, I can't smell that well in real life. And
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. yeah, no, but it's cool. Like, you know, you can go onto the Miiverse, post certain things about every level that you do in, like, Super Mario or whatnot. And if you have, like, any questions, just, like, post it there. Somebody will reply within, like 7 seconds. It's, like, yep. The version of Game Facts mixed in with like Twitter and Facebook, I guess, with the yes. But,
you basically have like a game forum,
yeah,
like built into the system for every game released on it, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, I wish that there was a general Wii U forum just to
that would be nice.
Whatever. I like to look in the popular posts on each forum. So, like, some forums are completely out of control, like a Funky Barn forum.
It's true.
If there was a general Wii U forum, I could only imagine the random stuff that would be happening on that forum. So, I would love that.
I think people could just make the Funky Barn forum the general Wii U one, just out of principle.
Yeah.
Two quick questions.
And the gamepad is awesome. The gamepad, the screen is very nice. You know, it feels pretty comfortable. Unfortunately, I find, to me, playing games that don't require you to keep looking at the gamepad or use it uniquely, that you're just, you know, playing a game normally, like, say, Call of Duty or Mighty Switch Force, that it kind of cramps up my hands, and that's not a good sign for things to come. But if I'm, you know, constantly using the Wii U or the gamepad in stressing ways like the Nintendo Land stuff, then, you know, it's completely fine. But, you know, the screen is very good, very good quality on the screen. However, like some of the more, like in Nintendo Land, for instance, the Pikmin game is beautiful on the TV screen. And when you look at the gamepad, you can kind of notice a hit in quality between the two. So it's noticeable on some things, but other than that, you know, you can, it's still a good quality screen, and, you know, touching and hitting the button, it feels all right. It's good. And they actually rubberized the analog sticks, so it's not as digging in on your thumbs as just Nintendo analog sticks.
Yeah, I actually really like the feeling of the gamepad. I don't have the problem of the hand cramping, and I played quite a lot yesterday of Zombie U. And didn't really have that problem or with other games, to be honest. So for me, it feels good. And I also like that it doesn't really feel all that heavy, which was, of course, a lot of people said before the thing was released that it wouldn't feel that heavy, but feeling it yourself, you're still quite surprised.
Yeah, and a lot of people feel that it's cheap because of that, but I really don't see it, because it does have a weight to it.
Yeah.
It's more heavy than, like, an Xbox controller.
That's true.
But it definitely doesn't feel cheap, and it's definitely not as heavy as you would think it is, like, looking at it. But there is a weight to it.
Mm.
So, okay. Should we talk about games?
Well, just before you jump on games, I had some quick questions. One going back to the Miiverse. Is the Miiverse regional, or is it like, is it just anybody you can see post?
It is regional in the sense that that's continental. Like, you have North America, or I'm not quite sure what it's called. Is it just North America or United?
It's the Americas, is what.
The Americas, right? The other thing is Europe and Oceania, and the other is Asia. So you have three basic regions. But
so you can't see them all
at once.
The
great thing is you can switch through them however you want.
Right,
so you can switch them on the fly.
That's right, but you can't see it like on a global scale altogether. I don't think.
What about if you have friends internationally? Could you see? Like, is there a way to see specifically what your friends are writing?
Yes, there is a notification center. When friends of yours are writing something, it shows up there, and you can just see their posts and what they have been doing, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like the Facebook feed, like the Facebook news feed there. It's called the activity feed, and you just see the most recent posts by everybody that you're following or on your friends list. And then, you know, when you make a post or reply to somebody else's posts, you will get a notification if somebody else yes your post or comments on something that you've commented on before. So.
Yeah, and the follow feature is actually pretty nice. At first I thought, like, why would I need a follow feature? But now seeing the Miiverse makes sense, because just like you said, a lot of people are just drawing things, and some of those drawings are actually pretty nice. You don't actually want to befriend that person, but maybe just follow him to see more of his drawings that he's doing for other games, maybe.
Yeah, and some people don't allow friends, so following them is, you know, the next best option. And you only have 100 friends that you're allowed to have on the Miiverse or your friends list or whatever, but you have 1,000 followers. So after you fill your friends list up, you can just start following people if you want to see, you know, what they're doing.
Okay. So, and switching between regions is pretty easy and stuff like that. What about in-game? Do you know, is it more friends or is it just random? Because I know Nintendo N does it, and New Super Mario Bros. U actually have, like, Miiverse comments integrated into the games.
I'm not sure, because I played those games at my friend's place yesterday, and on Friday. And he didn't have any friends on the system at that point, so I guess it was just random things showing up. And the game I have, Zombie U, doesn't use the Miiverse.
The question is Miiverse integration in the games?
Just is it pulled from your friends list, or is it just random Miiverses?
From what I've found playing New Super Mario Bros. U, they pull from your friends list a lot more than they do random. You will get some random people, but I find it's more common to see people from your friends list that pop up on each level saying, oh man, warning, Bowser is hard, two words, don't jump, or whatever they have to say. Those are like the two meme type things in that Miiverse, two words and dear Bowser. Nintendo Land, you can have people enter your Nintendo Land, I guess, that's what it's called. You can have people enter your land, and those consist of mostly your friends and some random people, but I don't know the method that they're using behind it, but I find that it's common that you're going to have your friends in your Nintendo Land, and then you can see their progress on what they have on Nintendo Land, all the stamps that they have, the progress in the games. So Miiverse integration is pretty good on those. Zombie U, I haven't played a ton of it, but from what I can see, you can just see posts by your friends. Okay, so with the gamepad, you can shine a light on the wall, and then at some points, your friends will have spray-painted graffiti on the wall. I don't really know what it means, but there's like a thumbs up, thumbs down, or there's like a house, and I haven't really deciphered it, but you can see, like, your friends' posts that way, or, like, the developers will have leaderboards on the wall and stuff like that.
Oh, right, yeah, I forgot about the spray painting stuff. Yeah, that's something they have in Zombie U. But that's a game thing. That's not actually Miiverse that it's using.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, unlike the others, yeah.
Well, I guess you folks want to kick us off with Zombie U impressions, then.
We can. I'm not quite sure how long I've been playing. I think like 5 or 6 hours maybe at this point. But I'm really enjoying it. I have to say, at first I was struggling a bit with controls of it, like managing, looking up, looking down. I mean, at the gamepad, looking down. And using the gamepad to actually select my weapons and stuff like that. But I think I got over that after like an hour or something like that at some point. And then it just became this pretty tense survival game because at least in my game so far, ammunition has been very scarce. And enemy encounters, when you encounter more than one zombie, it can get pretty tough because you can't really take many hits. And if a zombie grabs you, that's even worse because when you get bitten and then you are, well, basically dead because you turn to a zombie. So it's a very tense experience where you can sprint, but I rarely use it because I'm like inching away through these, let's call them levels, because it's kind of structured in a way that you have different locations in London. Just inching through those, trying to look out if anywhere is a zombie or maybe I can loot something. And if I find zombies, or basically try to figure out how I can get through such an encounter. For example, I went to the Buckingham Palace, and then I had to go through one hallway, and that hallway was full with like 5 normal zombies and 1 zombie in riot gear, which means you basically can't shoot him in the head because he has this dumb helmet on. So I had to figure out a way to get through those, and I was like, well, I need to knock off his helmet, but that's going to be hard with so many other zombies around. Then I looked into my backpack and found, oh, I still have a Molotov cocktail, so I used a Molotov cocktail to basically burn all those fuckers, which is nice. It's so satisfying to see a bunch of zombies running around, screaming and burning. but you still have to be careful, because if you don't die immediately, you can still try to run towards you. So you still have to be careful in cases like that. But it's just very cool experiences. I wouldn't say the game is flawless. I think the one thing most people would probably just see, I don't think it's the prettiest game. It has some very nice lighting, but that's about it.
There's some cool like dust effects where you know, you'll see dust and scratching on the actual screen that you're looking at. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think the melee combat could probably use some improvement. I mean, you basically can only shove people, zombies away, and you can just do this one overhead attack. I mean, it's still tactical because you have to figure out range, and especially when you're dealing with more than one enemy. But if you are dealing with one Riot Gear zombie alone, and you know, well, I can take out this one guy with my cricket bat, then it's just, okay, let's hit him 3 times, helmet goes off, and I'll hit him like 10 times more, and then he's dead. That's not very interesting. I wish there were like more moves that you could do. I don't know, swipe at his legs and he falls over, and then I can maybe bash his head in when he's at the floor, which is something you can do, but it's not like you can set it up in a specific way, which is something I would wish was possible.
Did you shoot him in the knees and then hit him in the head?
No.
So you can't aim your gun either, or they don't react to that?
Yeah, no, they don't react in that way. That
odd.
You can. Yeah, that's something that's odd, and I wish the game would do. But overall, it's a very enjoyable experience, I would say. Like, in a roguelike Dark Souls kind of way. Because the game is actually not very easy. I think it's pretty challenging at points. I'm playing on standard, but which is a normal difficulty, where you get a new survivor once you die. And I started out, and like within the first half hour, when I encountered my first group of zombies, I basically died. Because you really have to struggle at times. But it's a fun way. And if you die, depending on how you died, your corpse might still be lying in the environment, or you're running around as a zombie, which means that there's still a way to get your stuff back. Or if you have friends are on your list, or I think I even got a random person at some point, if they die, they also propagate the world, and so that's also a way to get to loot by killing zombies of other players, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, it does suffer from some of that, you know, launch game jank that a lot of games have when systems launch. But it's fun, but it's like you don't know why you're enjoying it, because it's very stressful. Like Dark Souls, it's like, oh god, like I don't know why I'm enjoying this. This is terrible, but for some reason I want to keep going. I want to keep putting myself through this punishment. Should I be rethinking my life? Should I be into S&M? Like, what's going on here?
I think the answer to both of those questions is yes.
Tension is extremely high. Like, I don't think I've ever played a game where I was afraid to encounter an enemy, because they are vicious. They will, if you're not prepared, and there's a lot of times in the game where they just, like, throw you into a situation, like, you're walking as normal, all of a sudden, uh-oh, something happened, and now there's, like, 50 zombies chasing after you. Think fast. There's often times where I'm like, oh, shit, there's a zombie, like, right in front of me. I have to think a way around the zombie, because I really do not want to encounter this thing, because they don't really give you a tutorial on how to attack. So, like, when I first encountered a zombie, I pretty much died right away, and I had to get a new survivor. I'm not very far in the game, but, yeah, from what I can tell so far, you know, the tension's very high. You have to think of clever ways to get around the situation or try to escape very fast. I'm enjoying it so far. It could change. I don't know how long the game is. I don't think I could do a game like that for too long, but I'm enjoying it so far.
Also, what I didn't mention, and you didn't as well, is I think the combination of your main screen and the gamepad, I think, works really well in this game. I wasn't sure about it at the beginning, but now that I've played it for a while, I think it's really fun. Especially the tension it builds, like, oh my god, I have to check my backpack to see if I still have this or that item with me. Okay, is no one around? Okay, let's see. And then I actually had a case where I was pretty sure no one was around, pulled up my backpack to look into it, and then I heard something coming up behind me, and then it's like this stressful situation. Oh no, let's get the backpack back up and kill this thing before it kills me. And it's pretty good. It really works this game. I don't think it would work in, like, a very twitchy first-person shooter, where, like, for example, Call of Duty.
Like, fast-paced, yeah.
There I would still say, I want my map and stuff on the screen, because otherwise it would be way too distracting. But in here, it works and actually builds the tension of the game. So.
Yeah, the gamepad stuff is integrated really well. What I don't like is, and the same problem I had with Metroid Prime, is having to scan every room that I encounter. Like, you don't have to, but it's more beneficial.
You get upgrades, so you no longer have to.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yep.
At the beginning, your thing you're using, basically it's a machine that's also in the game world. So it's a thing. And
I did notice that it had levels to build, so that's cool.
You have to push a button on the gamepad to ping the world, and then you see enemies on the map. But later on, you'll get an upgrade, so you basically ping constantly.
Okay, so, that's good.
But this is consistent across your players? Because I know certain things die when your player dies, but this...
When you die, you lose the stuff you had with you. That's all. You keep your progression, there's also like a level progression on how well you are with every weapon, but that you keep. You keep your weapon upgrades, and you keep everything you leave in the chest at your safe house. Just the items you had with you when you died are basically gone, except if you find the zombie, you see where and kill that thing.
Okay. Do you find yourself leaving stuff at the safe house more often because you don't want to risk using it if you die?
Only to some degree, because I still know I have to take stuff with me to survive in I'm missing ammunition at the safe house. I need that ammunition pretty badly. But for example, I have a couple of mines, and I don't think I will be using mines all the time, so I leave those at the safe house. Thanks. I'm not carrying planks with me all the time. Planks are there so you can barricade doors, but I haven't used that very often, so I'm not carrying like a bunch of planks around with me. Not really. And it actually helps the tension of the game, because you're really trying to survive for as long as possible with this one survivor. You don't want to die. And they really encourages with the game mechanics, and also the way you actually have like the score, which goes up with the survivor when you play for a long time with him or her, depending on it, which one you get. You get score for how long you survive, how many zombies you have killed, stuff like that. And there even are leaderboards for that stuff. So it really adds to the tension.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you two will be back with further impressions on that game. What about the... I assume you both got Nintendo in with your systems.
Go ahead.
Did not want to get Nintendo Land.
You did not get Nintendo Land?
I only played Nintendo Land at my friend's house, so I can tell you why. And tell you what I like and what I don't like about Nintendo Land. Basically, I played a couple of those player games, but those I did not particularly enjoy, I have to say. And the real fun of Nintendo Land was basically just playing it with four or five people. That's basically the only time I could have fun with Nintendo Land. And I, after the day I've spent at my friend's place, I knew this situation is not very often. So do I want to pay $50 extra to get Nintendo Land? And the decision was pretty quickly, no, I really don't need to. And the extra storage in the Wii U wasn't really a decision factor, because, I mean, the 32 gigabytes are also not much at all. I would later hook up a USB hard drive anyway, so I basically wanted to save the money. And the other thing is, I don't think all of those multiplayer games work very well. I mean, from a fun the Zelda one, I think, was kind of just boring and uninteresting. It's just swinging your sword around and hitting a button every once in a while to block, but it's kind of not very fun.
The Pikmin game, I only played the Versus game, I didn't find all that enjoyable. Basically what it came down to was the highlights were the Luigi's Mansion game, Mario Chase, and Sweet Day, which is based on Animal Crossing.
I find it funny that you don't like the cooperative games, but you went for all the competitive ones.
Yes!
What?
So fun. But not the competitive mode of Metroid. So, there you go. That's my impressions of Nintendo Land.
I have to completely disagree with all of that. I think Nintendo Land is amazing. I think it's amazing, and I think like this is the best thing I've done with my Wii U so far. I find all of the games very fun, more so the single-player games than the multiplayer games. And I find that there's a ton of content, especially for single-player. There's only 3 games that you have to play mandatorily with other people. And, like, you know, DK, Donkey Kong Crash Course, F-Zero, the balloon thing. I love Pikmin. They're all completely fun. I was addicted, like, as soon as I played all those games. The only game that I remotely dislike is Takamaru's Ninja Castle, where you have to shoot throwing stars at the screen. But even that, you know, I don't hate it. But I love all the games in there. And, like, the Pikmin, the Metroid, and the Zelda, like, they could be games on their own. They're super long. Even though the single-player, quote-unquote, mini-games have a lot of levels to go back to. And I found myself, because I played it a lot by myself, I took it over to my friend's house and played it there. And I found that I enjoyed it more playing it by myself, all those single-player games, and then showing my friends my scores, than having them try to beat my scores, rather than playing the competitive games, which are also pretty fun, but I find they get old a lot quicker, and then we just go back to trying to beat each other's scores on the single-player games, or doing that party mode where consists of, you know, passing the gamepad with the single-player stuff. But, dude, I love it. I love Nintendo Land. It's hands down. And I feel like I'm in the minority here, because a lot of people have stated, like journalists have stated, oh, you need a lot of people to enjoy this. But, yeah, I completely disagree. I love it.
Yeah, that's basically my. I did not enjoy playing it anything less than 4 people, and only those multiplayer games. And for me, it's basically really just the new Wii Sport. Something, even if I would have it, I would probably touch it like 2 or 3 times in the first year, and then probably never play it again. It's just really interesting.
And that's why I like this a lot better than Wii Sports, because with Wii Sports, I did play that a lot, but I did play it a lot with friends and not too much by myself. But with this game, I'm playing it a ton by myself, because I find all the games really fun and engaging. So, I like this a lot better than Wii Sports. I find that the introduction to the gamepad and all the stuff that it can do is pretty good, a pretty good usage of the gamepad. And all that stuff as well. Like, the Yoshi Touch and Go stuff is one of the best games on there. Actually, my tastes change every week on that stuff, or every day, I should say. Because when I first started, it was the Yoshi game, drawing the line, and then you see it on the screen. And then I really started liking the balloon fight and the F-Zero thing. Pikmin is, out of the ones, you know, that you play with people, I think Pikmin is my favorite. And then, like, all the single-player games.
Pikmin was really the one that, amongst my friends, no one really liked.
Happens. And it does seem like this. It's a mixed bag for everybody. Some people enjoy this game, some people don't. But it seems like, of the 12, that there is something for everybody to find enjoyable at some juncture.
But like I said, Nintendo Land is probably something your miles might vary game.
Yeah.
It depends on the person.
I talked to somebody on Twitter, and I was saying, you know, my least favorite game was the Takamaru's, and then he was like, dude, that's my favorite game on that whole thing. So it is quite like every person has their own thing for it. So.
And I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to show off the functionality of the controller by, you know, having all these various types of games. And I think it's going to depend on, one, if you have a big crowd, and two, what you think of. Because I've played most of them, and I also agree. I don't like Takamaru's Ninja. I think part of it is because the controller seems to drift off the screen at times. And
yeah,
it just makes it makes it really difficult to aim when you have to do that, so. And I assume you both played New Super Mario Bros. U?
Yes. I actually only a little single player, and most of it with four players. Which chaos on the
Yeah, that sounds terrible with four players.
My friends and I, we are all seasoned gamers, so it actually worked out pretty good. We went through levels at a good pace. There were only a couple of times where, like, I was trying to jump over a chasm and someone would, like, jump at the same time on my head and then I would die. But it was just a kind of a funny moment, and everyone went along with it, and it was still fun to play. And it's not really that punishing that it would make a bad experience, to be honest. The only thing I noticed is no one really wanted to use the gamepad to do the platform thing. No one was really interested in doing that at all.
Yeah, yeah. That sucks that they didn't let you use the gamepad for a player. I had fun with it. I did not think it's terrible like I thought it would be going into it, because I did not want another New Super Mario Brothers. I'm not really a huge fan of that series. I love Mario with a passion, but the New Super Mario Brothers has trailed off for me. But it was, you know, it was surprisingly fun, and I played it with a majority of two people. Started with three people. I played it with my friend and his wife, and after a while, we were like, three people is too much, and she just kind of sat out. And then by the end of it, she actually started using the gamepad, which was pretty interesting, and actually did add a new level of challenge, because you can't really sync up, like, you can't really communicate, oh, I'm going to put a platform here, and it's that's also a new game of chaos. But yeah, it's not challenging until you beat the game with all the stars, and you get Superstar Road, and then that's when, just like the original, or not the original, but New Super Mario Bros. Wii had their extra hard levels after you beat the game with all the stars, this one is also as crazy. What is the best about that game are the challenges, which I quite enjoy playing. That's the only part of the game that I've played by myself, are doing all those challenges, and that's quite fun. And the look of the game, it's beautiful. First HD Mario, the backgrounds are absolutely stunning. But yeah, you know, there's not really much to say about it. It's New Super Mario Brothers, and it's better than okay, is my final opinion on it. So.
I think I enjoyed my time with it. It's not like I was playing it and was like, well, this is kind of boring or something like that. I was really enjoying playing it, and I will probably still get it, but just not now. But I will get it down the road, I think.
I did not like using the Wii remotes.
Yeah, something I want to not talk about. I think it's retarded how Nintendo made this game work with the various controllers. I mean, you can use the gamepad to play the game, but only in single player. And as soon as you want to play with two people, both people have to use Wii modes. That's just dumb.
Yeah, I just, in general, I don't like using the Wii remote sideways. I think it's uncomfortable. Like,
I mean, why can't I use the Pro Controller or whatever the thing is called?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we didn't touch on is that you can play the entire game on the gamepad for this game. I also bought Mighty Switch Force, which is absolutely stunning, and the HD graphics on that, that's awesome. But you can also play it with the gamepad on that as well. And that's also a cool feature. Like, for a lot of the Nintendo Land stuff as well, you know, New Super Mario Brothers, Mighty Switch Force, going to the Miiverse, you don't need the TV on. And that's, like, the Miiverse is one, like, my second best thing about the Wii U, is that I don't need the TV. I can, you know, I was downloading The Walking Dead Episode 5, and I was just like, okay, while this is downloading, I'm going to play some stuff, play some Nintendo Land on my gamepad. Or I recently got back into Final Fantasy XI online, don't judge me, but while stuff was happening, I was like, you know what, let me just check the Miiverse on the gamepad. A lot of my usage for the Wii U is actually checking the Miiverse and doing stuff in the Miiverse, actually. But yeah, that's a really cool feature that I like.
Yeah, I actually...
I love handhelds.
I actually played a bunch of Nano Assault Neo just using the gamepad, because when you play with both screens, the gamepad doesn't really add anything. So I was like, well, this plays just fine in my bed without the TV. So yeah, it's a cool feature, and Nano Assault Neo is also very enjoyable if you liked Super Stardust HD. This game is totally for you.
Okay. It's a giant DS.
And I'm sure that's going to happen. The DS had some remarkable touch screen, dual screen games. Any other games you folks have been saying? I mean, as far as the Wii U goes.
Not on the Wii U. And to add to my decision process, I mean, it's not a secret that I am a big fan of Monster Hunter, so I guess I would have gotten a Wii U in March anyway.
Yeah, but by then they could have worked out all the kinks. You wouldn't have a day one patch. Maybe the OS would have been faster.
Yeah, but I'm still having a lot of fun with Zombie U at this point, so whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's about all the games I've been playing. I didn't talk about Mighty Switch Force, but there's nothing really to talk about. It's a 3DS game on the Wii U, and it's pretty fun. But other than that, I'm excited for Pikmin 3. I'm super excited for it. Every time I play that Pikmin game on Nintendo Land, I like cringe inside wanting to play Pikmin 3. So.
Well, let's hope it keeps you company for some time, because Nintendo doesn't seem to be in any hurry to get that out the door.
Yeah.
Okay, so that will do it for our Wii U discussion. I guess Chad and then you can actually wake up now, too. And we can talk about what you've been playing recently. I know Martin had a couple of other games he wanted to talk about before. Does Chad or Daniel have any games they want to discuss?
No.
Okay.
Exciting.
Okay, Martin, we're up to you then.
well, because Amazon has had, like, these flash sales over here, because Amazon Germany decided, let's just make a Cyber Monday week. Doesn't make much sense, but we had flash sales for a whole week. And I picked up Need for Speed Most Wanted for my PS3, and I actually really disappointed in the game. Because from all the footage we have seen of the game and the way some people talked about it, I was really basically expecting it to be Burnout Paradise 2 with licensed cars. The sad thing is, it really isn't. At least when it comes to the single player. I don't think the single player structure is good and at all. It's not. It's bad. Let's just say it this way. It's bad. I mean, the way you have to find your cars in the environment is kind of fun, but then if you want new races, you have to basically have races with every car, because every car has, like, I'm not quite sure, it's 5 or 6 races, I think, which is kind of retarded that I have to change the car to basically progress further or play online. Online is the other option. That's kind of bad. And I also think, compared to Burnout Paradise, it just doesn't have the... it's kind of repetitive, because they're basically only racing or scenarios where you have to escape from the cops. That's basically everything there is to in single player. And Burnout Paradise had racing, and then you have these takedown things.
Road rages.
Rages. and stunt challenges and stuff like that. And Most Wanted basically only has the open world stuff, so jumping the gates and jumping through the ads and stuff like that. But actually, the part that you need for the progression, there's not much else there besides racing, and that's kind of sad, to be honest. I expected more. When you go into the multiplayer, the whole thing changes, because they have the whole thing from Burnout Paradise with different challenges. Hey, go the fastest there, or try to jump on the roof of the building and stuff like that. And they have a bunch of different modes where you chasing each other or racing and stuff like that. And I just wish the single player was way more fleshed out, and so it's pretty disappointing for me.
Yeah, I didn't mind it's definitely disappointing. I didn't mind the single player just because of the fact that I really love the driving mechanics that only Criterion can pull off, and I like the world that you're in as well. So I didn't mind, I didn't mind the repetitive nature of just driving and doing races, because I love it. I love how they handle their cars. Very disappointing that, it's not the next Burnout Paradise, and I'm still waiting for that game, because that is the greatest racing game of all time, in my opinion. But
mine too.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's definitely like a Burnout light to tie you over until the real game comes along. So, but yeah, the multiplayer is miles better than the single player. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we're getting a Burnout Paradise 2. EA seems really, really adamant against that franchise for some reason.
The thing is, though, I don't really like the driving around in it, because I don't think the cars feel, of course, not as responsive as the cars in Burnout Paradise did, and I don't even think they are as responsive as the previous Criterion game, Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. The controls are not as direct as I wish they would be.
I didn't have a problem with the controls at all, but yeah, nothing will compare to Burnout Paradise. Like, the hit detection, how the cars handle in that game was absolutely perfect. But yeah, I had no problem with it.
It's not really a problem, it's just not as good as in the previous games. That's what I'm saying, which is, of course, a disappointment, because I'm a big Criterion fan, and I was even happy with the last Need for Speed they did, which was, of course, different from Need for Speed, but because it was very different, I didn't mind, because they had a totally different approach than with this new Most Wanted, which seems like they wanted to do a new Burnout Paradise, but maybe couldn't do it because the time was maybe too short. I mean, they had years, but I think Burnout Paradise took a while longer, so who knows?
Can I ask you a question, Earl?
Yeah.
I'm very, very curious. I have recently beaten Paper Mario Sticker Star, and that game is very polarizing. I've seen you tweet about it, but I've only mostly caught the tweets where you're talking about, in-game stuff, but I'm very curious on how you think about Paper Star, or Sticker Star.
Sticker Star is, I'm going to say this now, I'm not finished, I just finished World 4. I don't think it's going to rank, it's not going to beat the original, it's not going to be 1,000-year doors for me as far as Paper Mario games go. I think what happened, and this kind of came out in the Iwata Ask this week, is that Nintendo went for a smaller scale with this game. And I, generally speaking, I'm not huge on stories or anything like that in video games. It's not, it's not a deal breaker for me. But what the Paper Mario series has been known for, even Super Paper Mario to a greater extent, is the characters and worlds that you inhabit. And in this game, the whole fact that the only NPCs you really get to deal with are Toads, and the enemies are basically, they're all Mario staples, which is fine. But I miss the aspect of kind of like taking these characters that you know, and these archetypes that you already know, like the Goombas and stuff, and kind of branching them out to be more than just villains in the game. like, you know, like in previous Paper Mario games, your partners were ghosts. You know, they were Boos, they were Koopas, they were Goombas and stuff like that. But they had their own story, they had their own history. And I think removing the partners kind of took away that element of adding something to the story and being. I mean, the Toads are enjoyable and stuff, but it's been like 4 or 5 worlds, and it's still kind of, I'm still talking to Toads, and I want something different. I like the dynamic. I love the battle system, and it's one of those things that, I mean, it's a battle system that's really, what, 13 years old now? It's been the original Paper Mario game. It still works because there's no other reason to engage in battles unless you enjoy them. And I continue, I mean, even, you know, I'm like 12 hours in, I still engage in the battles. They don't give me XP. They don't give me enough coins most of the time. And I really get sick of them. But I continue to do them because I find them engaging. I find them fun. The timing's great and everything. So the core gameplay's there. I miss the trimmings that made the Paper Mario game special.
I completely agree. I think that game is super disappointing, and it's not terrible, because I wouldn't beat a game if it was terrible, but it's fun, yeah, like you said, but they've stripped away, you know, everything from, you know, the RPG elements and the story elements, and, you know, we had that news article where Miyamoto said that he didn't think that Paper Mario needed the story. And he didn't want, you know, adding any new characters, which is bizarre to me. Like, does he even know what Paper Mario is? But yeah, it's completely disappointing. It doesn't really feel like a Paper Mario, but it does still have that charm. I find that they've done, like, the whole papercraft vibe a lot better in this game than any other Paper Mario before it.
They did the paper, but it's more stickery-aided now. Which I find, you know, because I think Thousand Year Doors and Super Paper Mario went in that direction with it.
It's also a lot of cardboard stuff too.
Yeah, and I think the 3D in the game is fantastic. It's probably one of the best uses of 3D on the system so far. And I will say this, and it's not necessarily an excuse, but it is something that, you know, it's sometimes hard to distinguish between. Is that I think a lot of the changes they made, while it's not great for a Paper Mario fan, I think it does help when you think about the fact that it is a handheld game. The stages aren't that long. They're probably maybe half an hour a piece or so. It saves every time you exit a stage, so you don't have to worry about finding save points or anything like that. So I think it benefits in that regard, in that it's a lot more focused, it's a lot more condensed, and it's a lot more pick-up-and-play friendly. But there are, you know, it does miss the trimmings that make Paper Mario a great franchise. And the other thing I think it that hurts it is at times you don't necessarily know what to do with stickers as far as progression goes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I agree. Like, you hit a brick wall a lot. Like, it's not obvious at all what you have to be doing next. Granted, I didn't use Kirsty a lot for her, you know, recommendation stuff, which would probably have helped, but I do find that, you know, they're not really clear in what to do next, and then it's like, oh, really? I had to use this goat to eat up all this garbage in this level to progress? That's weird.
Oh, well, I haven't got there yet, so I assume I'm going to need the goat sticker at some point. Well, I have the goat sticker. I will say that was a fantastic cameo by Birdo.
Yes. Yeah.
The other thing that, I like that they keep on adding the sticker pages, is that the economy right now seems really broken in this game, in the sense that happened with a lot of RPGs, and that you can pretty much just go around the stage and peel stickers off the wall. There's very few times that you actually have to buy them. So I find that the only time I'm actually using my coins is, like, if I really, like, you can, you know, like, they are benefits for finishing a battle quickly with the perfect bonus, and the fact that you have those sticker gallery, whatever you call it, in the main hub, and that, and just kind of buying the secret doors, because sometimes those unlock things, which are cool. I don't use them that often, because I feel like they're wasting the most, because most general battles can be bested in no time.
Bosses are extremely difficult, and basically if you don't use thing stickers, then you won't the boss battles.
Yes, but you also have to use the right thing stickers.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, and it's one of those things that they don't, you don't know what it is going into it, so it's not like you can even come prepared.
Yeah, that's right. It's sort of like trial and error, and then you have to die and then be like, okay, so, yeah, what is this guy weak against? And every boss has some sort of weakness. So.
Yeah, I mean, some of them make sense. The vacuum for a giant boo made sense because of the Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
Using fire against a giant ice Bowser statue made sense. Though that kind of pissed me off because that was the one time that the game had some type of showdown to it. And that really throws off your timing for those. I was using my Infinite Jump, and like I got two hits off of it because the showdown was throwing off my timing. I'm like, I'm so pissed because I wasted a perfectly good stick. I could have done massive damage because I couldn't time it right. And it pretty much continued until the final form of the snowman was revealed.
Yeah, and some of the uses of stickers are really clever that, you know, you have to think outside the box. Like, for instance, one of the first final levels, I forget which world, but you have to paste stickers so that the wind stops blowing. And it took me a long time to realize that I had to do that in order for the wind to stop blowing so I can get across the bridge.
And come off.
Yeah, that's right, in time. But yeah, I never have less than 2,000 coins at any given moment, and that's me buying flashy stickers constantly and those secret doors. So there is no need for battling at all, which made me sort of try to skip most battles. It's just a bummer, and it sucks that I feel this way about Paper Mario, but I did not really enjoy it. My favorite part actually was the final boss, which is awesome. I can't wait for you to get to that. But
the bosses have been fun. The worlds have been interesting. It has great music, which I understand. It's just so weird. Nintendo Land has fantastic music. The Wii U has fantastic music. Paper Mario has fantastic music. New Super Mario Bros. U, they took a day off.
Yeah.
I don't hate the New Super Mario Brothers music. I like the bump bump. It's catchy, but I do think compared to the rest of the output for most of the other games, it does seem lazy, especially being that they've been using the same music for four games now. So yeah, I guess we'll wrap it up with Martin and Far Cry 3.
Yeah, we have already been going for long, so I guess I try to make it short. So, you guys, Far Cry 3 is pretty awesome.
Did you get the 360 version?
I'm playing it on PS3.
Okay.
I actually like what Ubisoft is doing with the Far Cry franchise, that basically Far Cry these days only means open world first-person shooter, and everything else can basically change, which I think is good. This game is really, really good. It even took some pages from Assassin's Creed in the way you discover the island and reveal parts of the maps. In Assassin's Creed, you had to get to high buildings. Here, you have to activate radio towers, which then reveal parts of map, and then you can, I don't know, you can take out camps so there are no longer patrols around in a certain area. You can take a bunch of side missions. These side missions can be hunting missions where you can get materials which allow you to craft pouches for yourself so you can carry around more ammunition. You can get kill missions where you have to kill a specific dude in the world with your knife. Then there are, of course, story missions, which are either placed in the open world or can be little levels inside of buildings or stuff like that. And what I do like is they keep all of the interesting open world stuff from Far Cry 2, but add to that interesting story missions, which often even have better, set piece moments
than some of the story missions Assassin's Creed had. So that's really good. The only problem I have with the game, and that's, I guess, something we will now hear basically every time, is the performance of the game is just not very good on consoles. I mean, I've seen how it can perform and how it looks on the PC, and it's just beautiful there. The console versions, both of them actually, have some serious frame rate issues from time to time. And the PS3 version even has like differing in the shadows and stuff like that. It's just not that great. It still is a beautiful looking game on the consoles. It's still up there, but the performance is just at times not there. Which is a shame. It really shows that we need new hardware for games like this. The thing is, though, the game is still so good that you can forgive these weak points. And one other thing is I noticed is that the voice acting is just tremendous in this game, especially the bad guy Vaas is just really, really good. I don't think I've been this enthusiastic about voice acting in a while. The other thing is, one thing that's weird is the story is interesting, but also all over the place, because it kind of begins in this realistic way, and then there comes in some mystical stuff, but all the people do like it's don't really seem to care about this mystical stuff that's happening around them. And then there's also our main character and his friends who have been captured by the pirates, who are all rich white douchebags, and for some reason we are supposed to care about them. I'm not really sure why, but I'm going along with it. Thankfully, the gameplay makes all that not as important. But developers really should learn that rich white douchebags are not something very sympathetic, and they should probably rethink the choosing of the main characters. Because at the start of the game, I was like, well, I kind of like this Vaas guy way more than any of my friends.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things where people are like, you know, they said diversify, not what people meant.
Yeah. And it makes it even worse because you're playing along through the story, and then at some point you meet a doctor who has all these weird drugs, and you can take one of his pills, and then you get a flashback moment to stuff that happened before you went to the island. And then you realize, the more times you do that and learn more about the past, the more you think, man, those guys are huge douchebags. So, yeah. My tip would be, don't take the pills, and maybe it makes these characters more sympathetic. But otherwise, I think it's just tremendous game. I think Ubisoft has really outdone themselves here, and I guess they probably expected Assassin's Creed to be their big title, which it probably is sales-wise, I guess, but I think this game is way better than Assassin's Creed 3.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't wait to play it, and there's probably no doubt that it is better than Assassin's Creed 3, because I thought Assassin's Creed 3 is a huge bummer, yeah. And I love that series. And I think that they did a lot of things well in Assassin's Creed 3, but I am burnt out on that series now. And I did not think that it was ever going to happen. But since Revelations, I've been burnt out. And I think any other improvements, unless it's a drastic change, will get me back into that series.
You're not excited for Co-op next year?
Yeah, that's right. I heard about that. I can't. Because I think because it's annual, I am super burnt out on Assassin's Creed. Or something needs to change a lot, or they need to take a break, in my opinion.
Yeah, a 20-hour-something game is not something you should put out on a yearly basis, I think.
thing, story heavy one too.
Yeah. So when you were talking about Far Cry 3 integrating, you know, the radio tower stuff, I kind of gritted my teeth there because that's now one of my least favorite things to do in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. You just do that, like, I think there are 20 overall, but it's not that big of a deal, to be honest. And yeah, they have other functions as well, because they act as respawn points, and you can zipline from there down from them to get to other points more quickly and stuff like that. So they are more interesting, I think. And the other thing, a lot of people, I think, I know people who really like Far Cry 2. I'm one of those guys who didn't, because I think the story aspect was way too weak, and it had problems like enemies respawning at checkpoints all the time, and the whole malaria aspect was kind of dumb. I think Far Cry 3 is basically, so if you enjoyed the whole open world simulation stuff about Far Cry 2, it's still all there in Far Cry 3, plus the interesting story missions, and without the bullshit like the constant respawn of enemies at checkpoints and the malaria.
Okay,
can't wait.
Super exciting. So that will do it for us this week as far as impressions goes. We're skipping out news, partially because when we're over time, we have a lot of time used up. And we also wanted to start our Game of the Year countdown shows. We do this every December 1 because I always hate the idea of doing a Game of the Year show in December when the year's not over. And 2, it always helps us to remember what has come throughout this year, because 12 months is a long time. And it's not just that your life focuses on video games, I hope, not anyhow. So this is always a good way to go back at what has come out. And, you know, sometimes you remember games that you probably thought came out last year or some distant time ago. For the purposes of timing, this week we're just going to do January and February because March has a lot more titles in it. We'll probably do 4 months next week because, let's be honest, May, June don't really offer much in the way of new titles. So, yes. This January, if memory serves me right, was one of the worst months in video game history as far as sales go, because I believe there was not a single new title on the top 10 list, and there was no new retail titles released until the very last day of January, with Final Fantasy 13-2 and Soul Calibur 5.
But you're forgetting the best game of the year. You've just missed out the best game of the year that released on the same day.
Pardon?
How could you forget about Never Dead?
I think most people forgot about Never Dead. Actually, I don't think most people cared about Never Dead.
Probably.
I'm only kidding. Never Dead was Never Dead was a bit crap, wasn't it?
I think Never Dead has a great concept that was poorly executed. The idea of a character who can't die and being able to use their body parts in various ways to solve... Or am I thinking of something different?
No, that's Never Dead.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a Rebellion game, so that's pretty much Rebellion games all over.
Great on paper. I mean, for the most part, most characters in games are pretty much in that guard tier anyhow because they're super awesome. But there are very few games that do that you actually can't die and use it effectively. I know Wario games did that on the Game Boy where like he couldn't die, so you could set him on fire to run through. Those were cool. The one that I'm a huge fan of was Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy, where the mummy couldn't die, so you could do you can torture him in various ways to get through certain areas of the castle and stuff like that. And that was interesting. Never Dead does not seem to have lived up to that potential. So, I mean, is there anything you folks want to say about Final Fantasy 13-2 or Soul Calibur 5 or Never Dead?
It's a sequel with no...
Which one?
No. Final Fantasy 13-2, I didn't even finished 13. I think that game is garbage, and I had no desire in picking up a sequel to that. So
wasn't 13-2 the one that we had to buy the end of the game as DLC?
I think so.
And the one that had the Mass Effect skins in it for no reason.
It is whatever. I put it past this point.
From what I've heard,
interested in a sequel to a sequel of a game that you don't want a sequel to?
No, not not at all.
5 is the other title. I got burnt out on Soul Calibur with the fourth title. So, actually with the third one, I think Soul Calibur 2 is the last one I really played. And at this point, I no longer care about Soul Calibur. I have one game in January that I really cared about, but let's see what you guys have to say about those big titles.
Yeah, I'll touch on 13-2 a little bit as a huge fan of 13. I think 13-2 is kind of garbage, and it shits on all the good stuff that I loved about 13 in terms of story. Gameplay is fantastic in 13-2. You know, the battle system, they refined a lot of that stuff. And if you're taking it just for, is this fun to play? Yeah, sure. But, you know, the storyline is almost, and the characters are almost, like, I do not skip anything in video games, especially not Final Fantasy. I usually think the voice acting is fantastic, but I had to skip a lot of dialogue in 13-2 because it was terrible, and the characters are super annoying. They made the characters that I loved about 13 also super annoying. In fact, you know, Final Fantasy X-2 did a much better job at making a sequel and advancing the story, even with the whole girl power thing, than 13-2 did to 13. So that's super disappointing for me. 13-2 was very disappointing, but it was fun, and got the platinum in it because the game was very fun. And it is probably going to be on my game of the year, nearing the very end of the list, maybe like 8, 9, or 10, because it is a good, it's a solid game, but it's very disappointing as a fan of 13.
Now, I'm kind of curious. I mean, I'm sure part of it speaks to the quality of the game, but does part of that also speak to the lack of very compelling titles released this year?
But that is on my game of the year?
Yeah, that is. I mean, like, it's near the bottom, but the fact
or
is that.
Yeah. I would say that's part of it. I like this year because it has just a lot of games. I played a ton of games, but I don't know. It's like not any of those games were smash hits, and every component didn't blend together completely well. Like, you have your Asherah's Wrath and, you know, Sleeping Dogs and a lot of games that came out. Darksiders 2. It's super polarizing year. Like, Mass Effect 3, even Assassin's Creed 3. I think everybody kind of agrees on Halo 4 being good, but it seems like it's just kind of Halo again. But, yeah, out of all the games that I played this year, I think in terms of did I like to play it from start to finish, did I get a lot of enjoyment out of it? 13-2 was fun to play in a lot of aspects, mostly the battle system and the non-linear nature of the story progression and the time stuff. There's some puzzles in it that I did not enjoy and were very repetitive, but that's kind of like a side story compared to what you have to do in that game. But yeah, you know, I guess so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a weird year this year, and I like it.
Okay. Very quickly, any of the arcade titles that came out in January you folks want to touch on? NFL Bit, Amy, Puddle.
Not an arcade title.
Wasn't that Amy, that horror game that was absolutely terrible and had screen tearing all over the place? Oh my god.
One title I really enjoyed in January was Dust Force.
That game is cool.
That game is super awesome. It's a platformer for the PC and the Mac.
It's mainly based around time attacks.
Yeah, exactly. You're basically trying to get as quickly as you can through the levels while sweeping up all the dust in the level. You're kind of playing a janitor, which is super agile and can run up walls and run on the ceiling, and it's super awesome to play. It's
got a great soundtrack as well.
When you master the controls, it's just a really fun experience to go through these levels in all these crazy ways. Kind of in that sense, it's kind of like something like Super Meat Boy, but I maybe not as tough, I think, because it's just time based. But yeah, really good. I think it has a nice look to it. Some beautiful animation also. Like you said, a good soundtrack. Yeah, Dust Falls.
Okay. I have that game from the Humble Bundle, but I haven't played it yet.
Oh, that was the other big thing we didn't talk about this week. THQ Humble Bundle. But we'll save that for another time. February picked up, though. There was a lot more retail releases. A lot of them, actually. The Darkness 2. We had the Mortal Kombat Arcade Collection or Complete Collection. I don't know. Jax and Dexter Collection, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, which got people fired, Resident Evil Revelations, what else do we have? Grand Slam Tennis 2, whoopee, Mario and Sonic at the Ending, yada yada yada, Tales of Abyss, Tekken 3D Prime Edition, Twisted Metal, that was out this year, huh, yeah. Go figure, UFC Undisputed 3, the PS Vita launch, which meant Little Deviant, Uncharted Golden Abyss, Rayman Origins, Michael Jackson, The Experience, we'll touch on that in a second, Azura's Wrath, Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater 3D, Syndicate, what else did we get? Lots of titles, Wipeout, Poke Park, Rhythm Heaven, Fever, SSX.
Oh, dude, yes, Rhythm Heaven, awesome.
Binary Domain, February was a pretty big month. It seems like it was more focused on the handheld sides of things. I guess Nintendo was trying to combat the PlayStation Vita launch and the PlayStation Vita was launching. And I guess we'll start there with those two because, I mean, the launch of a system's big news and we had two of them this year. So, PlayStation Vita, in hindsight, what do you think of the launch lineup?
It's okay.
It's all right.
It's not bad. There's nothing standout there though. It's just like here's some Uncharted for you, you know. Here's Rayman. It just seemed to be like here's a bunch of portable versions of other games and here's an Uncharted game. Nothing particularly bad though.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that came out before this, and even now people say it has one of the best launch lineups of a system, which I think speaks more to the quality of launch lineups in the past.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the only reason why it has a good one of the best launch lineups is because we've got games here that have already been proven, like F1 2011 and Uncharted and Rayman Origins and Wipeout. You know, they're games that people they already knew about those games. You know, they've probably already played them. So that's the only reason why it had a good launch lineup, really. It didn't have anything, I've got to go and get a PS Vita for this, though.
Man, it's been 10 months and they're still working on that. I mean, that's not to say that the 3DS fared much better this month. That month, I should say. Resident Evil Revelations, while a good game, and ironically would turn out to be the best Resident Evil game released this year... of the three, didn't really like The World on Fire. I guess Resident Evil.
I liked Revelations. I even enjoyed it more than Resident Evil 5.
Okay, so it's the best Resident Evil game released in the past 3 years.
Oh yeah, I know many people that prefer Revelations to 5 as well.
Yeah, I think because Revelations actually went back to what made Resident Evil, which is kind of the horror aspect. And as we've learned later on this year, 6 really deviated from that formula big time.
I also think Revelations had a really cool multiplayer mode where you go through parts of a single player in a co-op fashion and kill through more and more difficult monsters and you level up and you can upgrade your weapons, stuff like that. It kind of gets like this role-playing survival horror game thing going, and that was really good.
Yeah. Then we had the port of Metal Gear Solid 3, which really was not...
That's the strangest port ever. Because the Metal Gear Solid collection had not been out long before that, and it's got 3 in it.
And it was cheaper.
Yeah. And in, like, the DS has never had a Metal Gear Solid game, like, not even the normal DS, and here's Metal Gear Solid 3. The one in the middle of the fucking franchise.
It'd be like if you released Mass Effect 3 on a system after
Mass
Effect 3
came out.
It would be so silly to do something like that.
And from what I've heard, the port is also not very good.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The port is actually pretty awful. So you have a dated port that's more expensive than a HD collection that actually plays worse, and the 3D didn't really add anything to it. And the game doesn't have a second analog stick, so it makes it a pain in the ass to play.
Yep.
So yeah, good all around. On the console space was a lot more interesting, a lot more experimental. We had some sequels, but stuff like Kingdom of Amalur was a really interesting title, which, sadly enough, will probably be remembered for what happened around it more than what happened with it.
I played it.
I played the demo.
I played the demo too.
I got the impression of just, it's a high fantasy RPG, and it's not particularly new in any way, which is a shame.
I really enjoyed it. I still think I like it more than Skyrim. It's an open world RPG with actually a competent combat system. And that's why I really enjoyed it.
It felt too fably for me. It really comes across in the art style more than anything else.
Yeah, maybe. But otherwise it really isn't.
It's a shame, though, because it was by no means a bad game.
No. Like I said, I think...
And I think 38 Studios, obviously they didn't deserve what ended up coming to them.
Well, I mean...
Unfortunately, that's what happens when you make when you try to make an MMO as your first game, then end up doing something else, and end up spending more money than you ever anticipated.
Yeah, like I said, it sucks that ultimately that's what the game will be remembered for. It's not necessarily what the people did with it, but what kind of surrounded it. That's a story that's going to be passed down as we get further into the year, because I think Mass Effect 3 suffers from the same thing. We also had a Rhythm Heaven, which is not an upport, but there are other versions of it. But it's a very solid game.
Game is cool.
Yeah,
this is just WarioWare, but with music behind it. And then I realized it's made by the same people.
Yeah, they have that. They also did that one that never made it out here, which is I think Kiki Trick, which is kind of like this, but it's more of a sound based micro games.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Are really good at doing those microgame type things, though.
Hey, if you have your bread and butter, dress it up every way you can.
Yeah.
I mentioned Twisted Metal came out this year, which I completely forgot. I thought that was out last year. Don't all speak at once about how awesome it was.
Yeah, it's a PS2 exclusive, so I can't...
Twisted Metal.
Oh, right. I was very excited about Twisted Metal before it came out, but I basically didn't get it because they censored the shit out of it here in Europe, so I thought...
Really? Oh, saying that, you are in Germany.
No! For whole Europe.
Really?
Because of you guys, not us.
Whoa.
Cat
okay,
fight.
Right.
Because the UK doesn't like stabbing into the eye very much.
Well, most people don't.
But they don't like it on film, so they censored
the
whole...
Usually our country isn't too bad when it comes to that kind of thing, but...
But they didn't particularly enjoy the whole Sweet Tooth story stuff and him torturing the little girl and
that
her...
That sucks.
...the eye and stuff like that. And that's why the game got pretty censored and that really got hurt. And I thought, no, I'm not spending money on that.
I didn't like it. I played like a half hour of it, and I was also pretty excited because I was like, yeah, I love Twisted Metal growing up. But I guess, you know, that doesn't really translate well anymore to me because I didn't like it. It's been a while now, I only played like an hour of it. But I remember the controls being very, very strange. Like, strange to the fact where I was like, why did they... map the controls this way, but I forget.
I was talking about that.
Yeah. Some of the I guess it always played the beta way back when, and this is like a year ago. But I remember them like mapping out of functionalities to the D-pad, and some of the in general, I think a gas was X, which you're kind of accustomed to it being like the trigger buttons in most races nowadays. So yeah, it was a lot of odd little decisions. And then, if I remember correctly, when it launched, like they were having problems with people connecting online and stuff like that. Yep. And then, you know, I think the studio's still around, but like the head, David Jaffe, after this game and stuff like that. So
and they do iOS games now.
Which everybody, you know, that's another story that's going to happen throughout this year. You release a game and he just goes.
David Jaffe can with a company. He's just like constantly leaving companies after he put one in.
Yeah, it happened. It happened. Another interesting title, which I honestly should finish soon, is Azeroth's Wrath. It's hard to talk about this game because there's not much of a game there. But
it's more of a game than people think. There's a lot of, like, I don't know, God of War style fighting that goes on. Like, it's not a whole quick time event thing. There's
not a whole quick
fighting,
but the
Panzer Dragoon style stuff.
But the fighting, for the most part, is an end to it's a means to an end, because the purpose of fighting generally is so that you fill up your burst meter so you can trigger a quick time event so you can end the fight. So.
It's cool, you know, they had the whole anime thing, you know, previously on, and they had the credits per episode, which is super weird and pretty awesome.
Yeah, I give it
credit. The aesthetic was really nice.
I give it credit more than anything else for its presentation, from sound to voice acting to, you know, like the episodic nature of it. And that's why it works for me, and that's why I enjoy the game. But if I was to base this on being a game, this is like what Heavy Rain wanted to be. It's just that it took the concept and it just made it over the top and it worked. It's something I would recommend for $60. I don't know how it remained $60 most of this year. But
yeah, the price point is something for contention, but yeah.
Yeah, if you got this for like $10, $15, $20, it's a great buy. $60, I cannot recommend it.
It looks like I might enjoy this because I'm really into sort of the weird, quirky Japanese type things.
Yes, and I
rented it, so I really enjoyed it because I didn't pay anything.
Weird and quirky Japanese games you will see is leading the charge for my game of the year when we get to March. But yes, what else?
And,
do we
have? Yeah, Rhythm Heaven Fever is definitely high on my list. I didn't talk about it today, but yeah, game's good.
Yeah, Binary Domain. I've heard good things about that. I believe
game is pretty. Cool, and I, no matter how people kind of make the story sound ridiculous or dumb, while I was playing it, I really got into it. People probably know it's by the Yakuza guys, and I particularly enjoy those games. And while overly dramatic, I think the story was kind of interesting. And I think they did some interesting gameplay stuff it's still a cover-based third-person shooter, but I think they did some interesting stuff with how enemies react because they are robots and not humans, so they can do stuff differently than humanoid enemies, like, I don't know, shooting legs away and they can still come at you and stuff like that, so... I think the game was actually pretty good. I think kind of underrated.
Has it been given out on
PSN
just yet?
I enjoyed that game as well.
Okay. I'm sorry, there was too much at once.
That was that's Vanquish, though, you're thinking of, not Binary Domain yet.
Okay, not yet. No, I was asking if they give it out on PSN just yet, because I think that's coming out soon on PSN just. It's hard to say.
Did you use the voice command thing? It didn't look like it to work too well, to be honest.
No. You can just use the gamepad, so on the pads you can give orders and stuff, so whatever.
Yeah, and the choices are absolutely, it's a good game. Choices are absolutely ridiculous. I actually spoke about this game back when Diablo 3 was coming out on this podcast, where you know you have options like hey, you know, should we go in there and do this? And then the options are like, yeah, shut up. Okay, what? Absolutely ridiculous.
Redonkey-ish.
Towards the game as well.
And I think a game that a lot of people were surprised on, and I think it was a contender early on for a lot of people's Game of the Year. I honestly hate when people dictate a Game of the Year in like February and March and stuff like that, but SSX was a huge game for a lot of people.
I did not care for it, and I like SSX, but no. Just no.
What didn't you care for?
Mostly how they organized the whole multiplayer part of it. With not actually people, but having this weird time trial thing just going on, and I really enjoyed in the pre thing. From what I've heard, they patched it in later, but
yeah.
At that point, I lost all interest in playing it.
Yeah, I mean they patched it in I think in September, and at that point it's like 6 or 7 months if you. Like most, like video games have very short attention spans, or shelf lives, I should say. You kind of have like your month, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still a fun game. I agree with you. I think the multiplayer was done Aji. I get what they were trying to do, but I think that would have been awesome as a separate mode, and you still kind of had like competitive mode. And if you couldn't get it there for launch, there's no shame in the end of your game, especially being that it's a sports game. You could have done it over the summer or something like that.
Mm.
So, yeah. I think that's it for retail titles. There were some interesting...
two games I want to talk about.
Okay.
One, I guess, is retail title. The Darkness 2.
Oh my god, that game is great!
Yeah, I just recently played it because I got it for like $5 on...
I got it for like £3 at retail during a period where I couldn't really do anything else but play games.
It's also a game that I have on Steam that I haven't played, so that's good.
You should play it.
It's actually really good.
It's short but sweet.
The story is fun.
Yeah.
I think the whole controlling the darkness and shooting together works better than in the first game, so it's really fun to do all that stuff. I think the style the whole art style is better than in the first game because it resembles the comics just more in the way it's done. And yeah, it's just an enjoyable experience. I did not give one shit about trying to play the co-op mode or whatever that thing is, but the story is fun.
The co-op mode's okay if you play it on your own, because you can play it on your own. It's pretty much just a bunch of... The co-op mode... So, you know when... at the beginning, the first time you go back to Jackie's mansion, and he tells Vinny to go get some people to go find some guy... you know, the guy who knows all about the darkness.
Mm.
When you play the co-op missions, you actually go off and find the guy. So they kind of, like, there's a small link between the single player and the co-op. And you can play the co-op on your own, and if you play it on your own, it's just, like, some more missions that you have to do, basically. And you get four unique characters, and they all have their own unique darkness powers. So there's a woman who has a darkness gun. There's a guy who has a darkness katana. There's a Scottish guy who's the best character in the game, he's a Scottish drunk, and he's everything stereotypical that you would think of associated with a Scottish drunk. And he has a darkness axe that you can throw at people. And there's also a guy who has like a darkness voodoo stick, and it's quite cool playing like each character, and they have about one or two unique missions of their own. So once you've done the campaign as one character, you can then like switch to another and play their like two unique missions, which is pretty cool. I think the Darkness 2 was overall actually fairly underrated. I mean, it's not terribly long; you can finish it in about 8 hours, but it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, as I was to say, the games are really, really hard to gauge nowadays. It really depends on what you're getting. if you're 5 hours and there's like nothing there, that's one thing. Or you have to buy an ending, which is actually something you have to do in Azeroth's Wrath, I understand. But, you know, we also said with Assassin's Creed, you don't want a 20-hour franchise every year with that story heavy and that's kind of repetitious.
The only problem I had with Darkness 2 was sometimes the light gets annoying. If you stand in the light, you can't use the darkness powers, and it blinds you. The screen goes all black and white, and you can barely see. And that towards the end, I started getting quite irritated with that. But it wasn't too much, because you can just shoot the lights out. But, like, it's just a little pain. Other than that, the game was great.
Okay.
The other retail title I wanted to mention was, not because it was good, but because it was a huge bummer, was Syndicate.
Oh my god. I played the Chronicles of Riddick games, and I loved them, and I was like, oh yeah, a new Starbreeze game, this is going to be great. And I played the demo, and it was like, oh my god.
Syndicate, and I was already imagining all the opportunities they could go all Deus Ex with this thing. And what they delivered was quite pedestrian.
I was just like, so Starbreeze made a generic first-person shooter that makes you press LB every so often.
Yeah. Really a bummer.
No thanks. And then you turn the corner and you can't see. Not because, like, it has some gameplay implications, just because they decided to put bloom all over the place. No thanks.
The whole hut was totally...
Oh, that was very, yeah. Especially in co-op, where you couldn't see your own health and you had to see your friend's health. That was an odd decision. Like, I kind of understand what they're trying to go for. Like, you know, like, you want your teammates to help you out, but the fact that you don't give that feedback to the player.
Yeah.
It's an odd, odd design decision. Okay.
One more time.
The game is very forgettable. I remember enjoying it though, but I don't remember a lot about it. But I remember some like gameplay stuff that was kind of neat.
Yeah. So I just saw another game that I really enjoyed, but it's not. I don't think. Yeah, it's also a retail title, but it's for the PC, and it's. I don't think anyone of you guys probably have played it or maybe even heard much about it. I guess. If so, Daniel, probably. And it's Crusader Kings 2.
Oh, it's a Paradox game, isn't it?
It's a Paradox.
I don't play Paradox games.
Paradox Grand Strategy game.
Yeah.
Which is basically just played from a map, and you basically take a whole bunch of... make decisions like... which land do you want to acquire, and what taxes you want to take, stuff like that. But on some level, the game really grabbed me. Like I said, it's around crusading times, and you basically can pick any noble person that was living during the time period. So I picked, like, an Irish Earl, I think. And
go Earl.
And basically, I said you basically just get thrown into the times and let's see what you can try. So I wanted to basically conquer the whole of Ireland, and I was doing pretty well. I've won a few wars. Other land I acquired because I sent people over that basically created false documents which stated that land on some level was rightfully mine, which cost a bunch of money, but whatever, I get the land without having to fight a war. But what threw me off in my conquering of Ireland was my dumb son was way too greedy and wanted land all the time, and I didn't want to give him the land. And then on some level I discovered that he and my wife was plotting to kill me, and I threw both of them into jail and let them rot without them ever giving them a chance to get out again. And a lot of people didn't like that, apparently, and thought I was too hard on them.
See, you know,
I don't know what this game is, but it sounds like the best thing ever.
You know, you could tell,
it sounds like what Fable wanted to
you
be.
You could have just not mentioned his name, and I would have gone, you're talking about a Paradox game.
and stuff like that, when it happens, that makes games like these just so much fun. It's basically games that are totally just bought the simulation, but having it in this historical context and with the intrigue that happened around the time makes just very interesting. It's a hard game to get into, but once you do, it's also very rewarding, I think.
Okay. And I guess really quickly, so we can wrap up soon, is the digital side of things. One game I was actually surprised at, because I was really, 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 really opposed to the idea of it, was Gotham City Impostors.
I don't actually like that game at all.
It's kind of, I mean, it's like a simplified and somewhat cheesy Call of Duty clone.
And I'll tell you why I don't like it. So the first thing was, is when it came out, obviously you pay 1,200 Microsoft points. It didn't have a trial, and it had microtransactions as well. It's like...
Didn't that have a beta?
Really? It had a beta, yeah.
Okay.
But that's not the same thing, really, is it?
But I thought the microtransactions were stuff you can unlock in the game.
Oh, they can't. They are, but, like, I don't... I am very opposed to the idea of having microtransactions in games you have to buy anyway.
I understand that to a degree, but it's not like this game was forcing you, because you could have done it through traditional means, which is like the Call of Duty Evolution system, and knock it that way. If you were too lazy, you could just buy it. I don't necessarily think that's evil. It's not like you have to buy these things to unlock it.
I also think it's very sleazy. It's the same thing I had a problem with in the Assassin's Creed 3 multiplayer.
It's even worse than Assassin's Creed 3, because you're paying $60 for that.
Yes.
But I don't like the idea. If I'm paying for the game at all, like, you approach it accordingly to what you've put in it, and I don't want you to try and egg me on to buy anything else, and except for DLC, because it's obviously that stuff that comes after. But yeah, I don't like it. One, because of that, and two, because when it went free to play on Steam, because it actually is free to play on the PC now, I thought, you know what, I can't lose anything. I may as well just play it. And the game is very garish, and it has a lot of mechanics that get in your way, that sort of go out of their way to hinder people playing. So, for example, there's you can lay bear traps on the floor, and if somebody stands on a bear trap, their screen gets all obfuscated, and you have to do some sort of quick time event thing in order to get out of it. And I'm like, this is just horrible. Like, why are you doing this in a multiplayer competitive environment? You know, I want to be able to see everything. Like, I want a clear vision all the time, because that means I don't feel like I was unfairly screwed over by some guy who's just throwing something on the floor and just leaving it. And there's a lot of that in Gotham City Impostors. There's a lot of weapons like that.
But, yeah, when I played the beta, I also don't think the mechanics really felt all that tight compared to something like that. I just never had the feeling like I was totally in control of what I was doing. I think it.
I sort of had that as well, but it wasn't that much of a problem. I've played plenty of games where I haven't felt terribly in control of my character, but like when I started encountering the things that were just hindered you, like in weight, like just makes you can't see. I was like, you know, I can't do this now.
I guess the thing that I always notice in first person shooters, and I don't particularly enjoy in that genre.
Yeah, I guess I'm not going to say I'm completely impartial here, but I think part of it was just that I didn't mind, because I think it does kind of control kind of use, and I think some of the guns overpower. But I just kind of chalked that up to just being that it wasn't taking itself seriously. I mean, some of the things you can get is like rollerblades, which makes it even harder for you to control, but it makes it for you to move faster, and you know, like you can get the glide and stuff like that, which, you know, helps your movement. So I just kind of chalked most of that up to wanting it to be a bit more fast paced and not necessarily a twitch shooter, if that makes any sense, would add it up in the speed. And I mean, I can see both of your points. I mean, personally, I didn't buy the game. I checked out the beta. I had fun with it, but I didn't think it was worth $15. So And the other one I want to touch on is Shank 2.
I was going to buy that, but I just ended up not doing it because I played the first Shank, and the first Shank is great. I love it.
I didn't really like the first Shank, and I had no intention of buying the second.
Well, I was just saying,
go play Mark of the Ninja now.
I reviewed that for our site, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, I was about to say, part of the reason I wanted to mention this is because Jason actually reviewed it, but Jason's not here to actually talk about the game. he was big on it, though. He did enjoy it. So there's that, and it looks nice. And I guess the final big retail title, especially being that this is because of how this went about, is Alan Wake's American Nightmare, which was a retail franchise that went digital this year.
That came out?
Yes, that came out.
It was alright. The problem was that you went through the same environments like 3 times. That's not particularly fun.
I assume they didn't get the same budget they got with the retail version, so...
Yeah, the problem was, I think, the intention was to make a smaller single player than it even was, and just focus on the challenge aspect of the game, but then they thought they could do more with the single player. But it's still a problem. I think the story was still interesting to play, so whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else on this that you folks want to touch on? Okay, then good. So yes, we'll be back next week. Hopefully this won't be a 2-hour show. We'll be discussing games of March, April, May, and June to kind of get those out of the way. I don't know what to expect. We'll be probably posting some Christmas-related video game stuff this week on the site. It's really not a lot. For some reason, video games don't really celebrate Christmas for some odd reason. For Chad, who stepped out earlier, Martin, Daniel, and Phil for joining us, this has been Dual World in episode 91.